What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Mind Over Macros podcast. As always, I am your host, Mike Milner. Today, I was joined by an amazing guest. I had Rachel Shear on the show, and this conversation was packed. You're going to just dig in and go to town on this information because Rachel has a really cool personal story that led her down the functional medicine rabbit hole. And I say rabbit hole because I think a lot of times it's easy to get caught up in the weeds with more advanced concepts when you're dealing with gut health issues or autoimmune conditions. And what I really loved about our conversation is Rachel simplified a lot of the more complex topics when it comes to like what's actually happening in the body when there is an autoimmune condition present. What happens when our gut health starts to deteriorate? What other systems in the body are influenced and impacted? And then how do we get back to real health, optimal health, feeling our best? And what I also think is important was that we talked about delineating between aesthetics and health, because oftentimes we see somebody who represents what we believe to be health, but below the surface, there may be a lot of issues going on. And that's where Rachel's story is really important to hear. So you're going to love this conversation. And if you do, the best thing that you can do for us is spread the love and share it. You can take a screenshot of the episode and post it to your stories on Instagram, and you can tag us both. You can tag me at @coach_Mike_Milner, and you can tag Rachel at Rachel Shear. So it's at @RachelSCHEER at Rachel Shear. Tag us both. And then please, if you would be so kind, leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, because if you do, you are eligible to win a free supplement of your choice from one of our sponsors, Cured Nutrition, Organifi, or Legion Athletics. You get your pick of the litter, any product that you want from any of our sponsors. All you have to do is submit a review that is 5 stars. And the easiest way to do that is just to pull up the podcast app on your phone, hit the search button, type in Mind Over Macros, and then you click on the thumbnail that shows up. And then you scroll down until you see ratings and reviews. And then you write a review and you submit, and you're eligible to win. And if you're not already subscribed to the show, please go ahead and do that right now. Whatever platform you listen on, subscribe, follow, whatever the button is. You know the button I'm talking about. It just notifies you when new episodes are available every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So go ahead and do that for me. And with that being said, let's get into the conversation with Rachel Shear. What's up, everybody? I am joined today by a very special guest. I've got Rachel Shear on the show with me. And I don't even know, like, you do so many things, like speaker, author, functional medicine practitioner. We were just talking about your business coaching stuff and all the things that you've done. So I'll let you tell the background story, because I always love to hear just like the path and how it all came to be. As I was just sharing before we hit record, like, I never imagined that I'd be doing what I'm doing now. And it was kind of this like windy road that led me to where we are today. And I'd love to hear just like the starting point as far back as you want to go that provides context to where we are today.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on your show here today, Michael. I know we were talking a little bit off air about like how we've gotten into the different line of work that we're currently in. And for me, you know, what I was sharing is it's always been something that I just felt called to do or to dive into based off of what I was walking through in my own life, right? And, you know, I could give myself many different titles, right? I could be, you know, the entrepreneur, the business coach, the fitness model. You know, I could give myself the label of the functional medicine practitioner. And it's like, which one truly am I? But ultimately, you know, what started me on my journey was really a journey of losing my health. And I didn't know the meaning of health, to be honest, until I lost it, right? And I think very often, you know, society gives us this idea of what it means to be healthy, right? But health isn't the absence of disease. It is the presence of optimal feeling and function. And I'd been an athlete my entire life. I was a gymnast. I was a dancer. I actually went to Baylor for nutrition and dietetics. So I got into nutrition because of the athletic performance side. So I'd always considered myself to be a very, very healthy person. Excuse me. And then in college, I actually got into bodybuilding, you know, and also growing up, I was a pretty shy girl. I was very, very insecure. So fitness, so bodybuilding, you know, it gave me this sense of confidence in myself that I felt like I had never had before. And I feel like that's true to most people, right? And why we get started on our fitness journey. So maybe we're unconfident. Maybe we don't like the way that we look. Maybe, you know, we struggle to really show up for ourselves the way that we need to follow through on the things that we need to do. But most people, right, we're in a point where we're not super happy in our body. We're not super happy in our life. And then, you know, fitness really is that gateway drug to personal development. And even though I was an athlete and I went to school for nutrition, you know, finding bodybuilding was something that was completely different for me. And I actually started to compete in back-to-back competitions. So I was competing at the national level. I got down to 10% body fat. And, you know, from the outside looking in, you know, you'd think I was very, very healthy, right? I was shredded beyond belief. I actually, at this time, had grown my social media. I was the cover of magazines like Men's Health, bodybuilding.com. So now I had stepped into fitness modeling. But you know what, Mike? Looking back now, that was probably one of the most unhealthy periods of my entire life. And my entire sense of worth ultimately came from my physical body, right? Fitness started off to me to be this very, very healthy venture to create confidence, and it did that. But then soon, because, you know, I hadn't done a lot of my own inner work and healing, it ultimately led to be something that was doing the opposite for me, right? And I started to actually struggle a lot with health issues, you know, and it got so severe that, you know, I was struggling daily with chronic depression. I was struggling with chronic anxiety, chronic bloating, and this really led me down a journey of trying to figure out the root of a lot of my health issues, right? Because I didn't understand it. I was physically fit from the outside. I was healthy, right? I was doing all of the right things, but here I was, you know, struggling with a lot of these chronic health issues, which led me down the Western medicine route, which, you know, I think that's what most of us do when something's off. We're like, okay, I'm gonna go to the doctor. I need to get some lab work done. I need to get checked out. But little did I know that was then going to set me on a journey for the next 2 years of really, really struggling day in and day out with, you know, my mental health, was struggling with my physical health. And I was passed around from physician to physician, to different specialist to specialist. I probably did every scan under the sun, but because a lot of my health issues were these chronic health issues, right? Depression, anxiety. You know, I was given the diagnosis of IBS or irritable bowel syndrome. I was really just offered, you know, what I call a trash can diagnosis, right? So if you have major depressive disorder or depression, you're given medication for that if you fit the criteria of symptom clusters. Because I did a lot of the scans to rule out anything major with a lot of my gut, I was given a diagnosis of, you know, IBS or irritable bowel syndrome. So I was put on medication for that. And I got to the point where I was on 5+ medications to manage all of these symptoms. And, you know, I just was continuing to get worse and worse. And ultimately, I ended up going to a colorectal surgeon's office because of my gut issues becoming so severe that they actually suggested the removal of my entire large intestine now at this point. And for me, when I got that doctor's order that I should probably get my entire large intestine cut out now as a byproduct of all of these chronic health issues that had developed. And, you know, I felt betrayed by my body in so many ways. But I had this small inner knowing in me, despite all of this, that, you know, that there was another way, that, you know, what I was being taught about health and the Western medicine approach and, you know, the different medication that I was being put on and the solution for having my large intestine removed really wasn't the solution. And this really catapulted me into an entire journey of really becoming obsessed with getting to the root cause of all of my health issues. And I started to research and learn about gut health and the microbiome. I started to learn about how, you know, the body is this whole interconnected system instead of a random collection of independent organs, like what, you know, we really see in Western medicine, right? You go from specialist to specialist based off of, you know, the gastroenterologist, you go to the endocrinologist for hormones, you go to the psychologist, you go to all of these people who specialize, but really at the core, like everything is interconnected within the body. And as I did my own research and self-application, I was actually able to fully heal my entire body holistically, which involved a lot of, you know, changes with my lifestyle, with my nutrition. It also involved doing a lot of the deep inner work and a lot of the healing work, the relationship that I had with myself. But ultimately, by healing my entire body and not having to have my entire large intestine removed, you know, it gave me this powerful why. It gave me this why of, you know, I want to help other people with giving them the approach that I wish that I had when I was struggling so much with my health issues, because there really wasn't anything that I had seen like that out there where, you know, it was very root cause focused, right? It looked at the body as an interconnected system, but it also was very hands-on on the coaching side, right? Because if one person would have actually just really gotten to know me and my life and looked at what was really happening for me mentally, emotionally, if they had looked at my lifestyle and, you know, how I was under so much metabolic stress with competing in bodybuilding, right? It would have been so obvious. And I think this is really the difference between, you know, working with a physician and a practitioner who gives you 15 minutes and then practices medicine, which again, nothing wrong with, versus, you know, working with a coach, like you're a coach. And this is why I'm such a huge believer in coaching really as part of the healthcare of the future, because ultimately we're able to really help people, you know, on their healing journey. I used to say, I am a healer, but ultimately, no, we're just creating the space and giving other people the tools for them to heal themselves. But it led me to the current work that I do today, which now I have a functional medicine practice that has changed the lives of over 5,000 people through taking a root cause approach. So we do functional medicine lab testing. We look at gut hormones, thyroid, adrenals. You know, we look at, you know, what the root causes could be based off of the labs, but also based off of, you know, what's actually happening in that person, their history, you know, what their lifestyle looks like. And we work with them, we coach with them to create a protocol for them to not only heal, but also to reach their most optimal health, right? Because when health is absent, you know, everything else in our life is not possible. Like relationships are not possible. Having the business, the mission, the things that we ultimately crave so much for, none of that is possible when our health is absent. So what I'm most passionate about is really giving people their health back, which ultimately gives them their life back so they can create the life and the abundance that they want for themselves. So,
yeah, and I really appreciate you sharing that, because it's very relatable, but it also brings up an important point. Now we're going to go into some rabbit holes, because I want to talk about root causes and kind of what we can learn through that, kind of doing that more diagnostic, understanding what's holding you back and looking at the body as an interconnected system. So we're going to dig into that. But first, I think you brought up a great point, or your story illuminates a really strong message that we often conflate aesthetics with health. We often look at somebody who, you know, looks the part, whether they're, you know, competitive bodybuilder or just somebody that we follow on social media, and we assume that they are like the model of health. It's like, oh, I want to look like that person. The way that they show up on social media as like the highlight reel version of themselves. And rarely do we ever think like what's happening below the surface and that they might be struggling with other health issues. So I'm curious, from your experience, like, what were the things that you were doing when you were in your prime of, you know, bodybuilding, competing, looking the part, that were causing those issues? Because I'm assuming like you're training consistently. You're like checking the traditional boxes that we all think about. Like, I got to move my body. I got to, you know, lift some weights. I got to eat some protein and quality food. I'm sure that a lot of those things were in place. So as you started to peel back the layers, what was it that you were doing? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this right now that are on that path of checking the boxes, but maybe not recognizing that there's some other subtleties to the, maybe it's the stress that they're putting on their system or the lack of recovery or sleep or whatever it may be. But for you personally, what were some of those things that you started to tease out when you peel back the layers that were causing some of those chronic health issues?
Yeah. You know, there was definitely some things like in my diet I needed to change. Like a lot of the foods I were eating, I would now consider them to not necessarily be, you know, quote unquote, gut healthy. You know, coming from the fitness world, like a lot of pre-workouts and post-workouts and a bit more of like some of the artificial foods. I don't know if you're familiar or you ever used Walden Farms or any of those type of products. It's Frankenfood. It's not real food. But, you know, it was calorie and macronutrient friendly. So there was some of that. Do I think that that was the root cause of what led to all of these health issues? By no means. I think ultimately what led to a lot of my health issues was I was under a massive amount of metabolic stress in my body. And the metabolic stress and just stress as a whole was a byproduct of, you know, me really pushing my body to a very extreme point. You know, I was in quite a bit of a caloric deficit. As a female, which we know is not healthy at all, is not conducive for overall health. And so I think my body, under a ton of this metabolic stress, I was operating in a very catabolic state. So in functional medicine, we talk about a catabolic state as a breakdown state, right? In bodybuilding, we want to be in an anabolic state, right? We want to be, you know, focusing on building muscle. You know, we've all heard of anabolic steroids. But when we're operating in a chronic catabolic state, which is, you know, what we're in when we're doing weight loss, but when we're in that for a long period of time, the body is in a very excessive breakdown state. Now, what is actually happening when we are operating in a chronic catabolic state? Well, the nervous system often is impacted. So cortisol becomes chronically elevated when we're operating in more of a catabolic state as a byproduct. We start to see different shifts and changes in the whole neuroendocrine system. So hormones begin to decrease. So females, that's estrogen, that's progesterone, that's testosterone. You know, same thing for men. We see a decrease in testosterone. We see thyroid levels begin to decrease, so leading to hypothyroidism. So everything actually begins to slow down. Metabolically, we begin to slow down as a byproduct of it. And, you know, let's just say you factor in a lot of other emotional stress, which I definitely had in my life. You know, I can now look back and say I was operating from a very dysregulated nervous system, you know. So I was operating in a lot of fight or flight. So I think both of these things combined, emotional stress, a little bit of some dietary stress, you know, but a ton of this physical and metabolic stress, it put my body in a hypercatabolic state, which impacted my hormones, which impacted my thyroid. So I had hypothyroidism. I was put on thyroid medication. And also what we don't think about is when the body is in a very catabolic state, when we're in a breakdown state, and when we are operating more in this sympathetic fight or flight state, you know, the gut also completely shuts down as a byproduct. We stop producing digestive enzymes. We stop the motility through the gastrointestinal tract, because in order for the gut to function, we have to be in a rest and a digest state. We have to be in a parasympathetic state. Now, we need the sympathetic state, and we obviously need the parasympathetic state, but it's when we almost get stuck living in one, especially for, I think, most people these days. A lot of people are stuck living in a fight or flight, a sympathetic dominant state, and this is really the root of a lot of dis-ease that is then created in the body. So this is also kind of how everything is interconnected, right? Because it was this metabolic stress that I was under. It was the combination of with some of this emotional stress, yes, some dietary things that maybe weren't good for my gut health that created this perfect storm that led to really the breakdown of my gut lining. So we call this leaky gut in functional medicine, which leaky gut really is where we start to get bacteria, foods, and toxins leaking into the bloodstream because the gut lining has broken down. Chronically high levels of cortisol can do this. A inflammatory diet can do this. A ton of, you know, stress can do this. So cortisol, breaking that down. And this is actually what creates food sensitivities, right? Because we're getting foods that are leaking into the bloodstream. This is what causes massive immune and systemic inflammation throughout the body. So this leads to brain fog for a lot of people. This leads to a lot of chronic fatigue. And then also too, if left unaddressed, this can even lead to the onset of autoimmune conditions for some people because we actually house a lot of our immune system in the gut. And because of this immune upregulation, it can trigger that. So this is where we can start to look at, you know, all dis-ease really comes back to really four different types of stressors. And for everybody, it's different. It's a degree of emotional stress. It can be dietary stress. For some people, the dietary component is much bigger for them. You know, for other people, it can be physical stress. I had a good amount of that. This could also be injuries that somebody has too that causes chronic inflammation throughout the body. And then the other one, you know, is environmental stress, right? Our environment plays such a huge role in our overall health. And, you know, when I talk about environmental stress, this could be like you literally are living in like a toxic home that's full of mold, or maybe you've had different kind of environmental exposures with herbicides and pesticides and what that can do to the body. But it's also the people that you surround yourself with. It's the environment that you live in. So I think it normally comes down to one of these four things. In hindsight, looking back for me, you know, that's exactly what happened and what created this whole terrain for, you know, my hormone issues, thyroid issues, gut issues. This led to my terrain and my gut to become dysbiotic. So I had an imbalance of bacteria now in my gut. I had SIBO. So it all kind of makes sense now of how it's so interconnected. But at the time, right, this wasn't what Western medicine was really looking at, right? They were looking at everything so independently from each other and also not really looking at why is this happening in the first place?
Yeah, it's such a good point. I my personal experience, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's 2 years ago. Hypothyroidism. I am convinced that I did it to myself through years and years and years of chronic dieting. And I always try to look at it as like what, because our body's main purpose and the overarching goal is just to keep us alive. So when you talk about things like when we're under this chronic stress, metabolic stress, emotional stress, we've got this accumulation of chronic stressors. What is like, for example, our gut and digestive tract like kind of shutting down and then we experience some, you know, leaky gut or whatever the case may be, is that because our body is going into like, hey, we just need to stay alive right now. So we need like all hands on deck to deal with whatever stressor is the most immediate threat and it's pulling resources from other systems in the body. Like what is the survival or evolutionary mechanism at play that leads to these things like autoimmune conditions or you know, because I had SIBO as well, all the things that I'm trying to like self-diagnose and figure out, like, what did I do to myself and what was my body trying to do for me that created some of these scenarios?
Yeah. Well, you definitely have a background then in like the functional space. If you've had SIBO, you were diagnosed with Hashimoto's, right? And I do think that our body is incredibly intelligent. Our body is actually always trying to protect us, right? So you think about when we get sick, right? Let's consider COVID. What is happening, right? Our body is heating us up. It's giving us a very high temperature. You know, it's doing all of these things to try to, right, get rid of the illness, the virus out of our body. Now, we don't like the way that we feel. We don't like a lot of the symptoms that manifest. But something I always say is, you know, symptoms are really a whisper to our body for us to take more notice. It's a sign of something is off. And often our body is trying to protect itself. So like, let's take, for example, somebody who has been chronically over dieting, you know, who's under a ton of emotional stress. The body is using so much energy and is also operating in a net negative energy place, because that's really what's happening, right? When we are chronically dieting, we don't have enough energy coming in. Fine, for a short period of time. Again, acute, chronic, this is when everything becomes problematic, right? It's like, you know, acute stress is actually very anabolic. It helps us, you know, if you think of like ice baths and lifting weights and working out, great. Chronic stress, this is where our body just continues to break down and down and down and doesn't actually have the means to build back stronger. But essentially, oh man, I just lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
It's coming back to me. What was I saying? So the body is in a very...
It's trying to protect us, and it's, and we're just talking...
Yes, thank you.
Evolutionary mechanism of like trying to keep us alive here, and what's happening when we see some of these symptoms and diagnoses based off of chronic stress.
Yes, exactly. So the body is always trying to protect us. So for example, when we are in this net negative energy place, the body is going to slow down our thyroid, which is slowing down our body's thermostat in order to protect us. So what is that going to do? It's going to make us colder, and it's actually making us more energy efficient, right? So we are actually doing more with less, right? Essentially, that's what metabolic adaptation is for a lot of people who are like, wow, I can't lose weight. Well, we've been operating so long in this net negative point for a period of our life that essentially, you know, our body is now adapting to that and it's trying to survive based off of what it's being given. So, you know, how can we conserve as much energy as possible for your survival? Well, we're going to make you tired because if I make you tired, you'll probably conserve more energy. If I make you really cold, right, we can conserve more energy there because, you know, the higher the temperature of your body, the more energy that takes ultimately. And then, you know, this is where our body starts to also slow down different body systems. So it's slowing down our gastrointestinal tract. So everything just begins to operate slower, in my opinion, like when we're operating in, let's say, a very catabolic state based off of energy intake. Now, autoimmune conditions, we work quite a bit with that in my practice. And we actually talk about the three root causes that can lead to the development of an autoimmune condition, right? And you go to a Western medicine physician, and let's say they ran the labs, luckily, right? Maybe they actually ran labs to look at your thyroid antibodies, which even most functional medicine physicians don't. But they found out you had high antibodies on your thyroid. So you're given a diagnosis of Hashimoto's. Usually the solution is, all right, here's medication. Maybe they give you actual bioidentical thyroid medication, but oftentimes it may even be synthetic, which we now know that some of the synthetic thyroid hormones, especially like just T4, actually can contribute to things like SIBO. But that's really the solution, right? So we see that the thyroid is impacted. So let's get the thyroid levels back. But our body, right, is doing something very purposely based off of something else that is happening based off of these root causes. So there's a few things that can be playing a role with the development of an autoimmune condition. So the gut plays a huge role. So we have at least 70% of our immune system based in the gut. And often what we see in the majority of the time with somebody who has an autoimmune condition, we do see intestinal permeability. So we see that leaky gut. So something has happened, whether it's, you know, it could have been the over-dieting, it could have been the emotional stress, it could have been the dietary stress, it could have been these stressors that ultimately led to maybe the breakdown of the gut lining, led to leaky gut, where you started to get bacteria, foods, and toxins leaking into the bloodstream. You know, with left uncorrected over a long period of time, the body gets massive inflammation, immune upregulation. And then eventually a lot of that immune system upregulation can then begin to transition into an autoimmune condition. And then also too, the bacteria in our gut play a huge role in our immune system. quite a bit. So usually we'll see a bit of immune system issues that are happening, but the gut plays a huge role, which is why it's so crucial to heal the gut. But in order to heal the gut, we have to work on the stressors of what led to the gut becoming off in the first place. There's also genetic predisposition, right? So actually 30% of autoimmune conditions do have a bit of a genetic predisposition. Some of the genetics that we look at is something called methylation. So you could have a genetic defect for COMT, MTHFR. These are methylation defects that play a big role in how your body deals with inflammation as well as detoxification. So if the body is unable to detox properly, this can actually really negatively impact the body's immune system and also inflammatory response. So often we will run some of this genetic testing on our clients to see if they have any of these genetic predispositions. The good news is if you do have a COMT defect or MTHFR, you can actually support that with some pre-methylated B vitamins to help bypass a bit of the methylation. Super crucial to be on that if you're somebody who has methylation issues, which I would say most people actually have methylation issues, to help the body when it's dealing with an autoimmune condition. And two, people who have methylation issues, they have a higher likelihood of mental health issues, depression, because they also don't deal with, they don't produce neurotransmitters the same way, serotonin and dopamine. So there's genetics, there's the gut, and then we go into the environmental side of it all. And often we'll see somebody who maybe got an infection, right? It could have been a viral infection. We could see toxicities in their body like mycotoxins, mold. We could see heavy metals. We could see gut pathogens. But essentially, right, when the body has some kind of an infection, we see the immune system become overactivated. And especially if we have some of these other things combined, you know, this can lead to the onset of an autoimmune condition. So how do we heal the body, heal the immune system? Well, we have to heal the gut. We have to address the genetic predisposition if there's some of that. And then we have to remove some of the environmental factors that are playing a role in the immune system. And this way we can lower a bit of the threshold and we can decrease a bit of those antibodies. And this is really, you know, the big difference between functional and Western medicine.
Yeah, it's super interesting. This is going to be a weird question. When you're looking at all these different components, it makes perfect sense. And understanding where the stressors are coming from, the various sources, we've got like the environmental, we've got the physical, we've got the dietary, emotional. And then you're talking about, okay, we also have to make sure that we're healing our gut. We've got all these different things. Like, how do you help somebody not be stressed at all the different things that they have to consider? Like, it feels like I can picture somebody listening like, oh, this makes so much sense. And like, I want to know
where do I start?
All these different things I have to consider. And I'm just trying to like be healthy and live a long life and, you know, be fit and look and feel my best. So it's like, sometimes when you hear the message of like, don't be too stressed or don't do too much exercise. Don't.
And that doesn't
like,
work.
Just by thinking about it, I'm like stressing about it. And then how do you help somebody simplify and just kind of take an approach that feels very much within their control?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of what I'm speaking to here is somebody who is dealing with some chronic health issues, which is most people. I think if most of us were to go outside, leave our homes, get around each other, we would see that most of us are dealing with, you know, a bit of some of these chronic health issues. I think mental health is some of the biggest ones that a lot of us are struggling with. Next to that is gut issues, autoimmune conditions, right? But that's where if you are experiencing any of these symptoms, right, that is an indicator of, okay, there is something that is probably off internally in my body. Now, the areas that we tend to focus on first and foremost with our clients is going to be on nutrition, the food that we put into our body, because, you know, the food that we eat really has such a powerful way to heal us, you know, especially if we're considering our gut and how that plays a role in literally every system in our entire body. addressing the food. And then I'd say the next most important thing is addressing the emotional side, addressing the nervous system as well. And I found that when we can really work on the nutrition side, and for a lot of people, that's just choosing to eat food that love them back. You know, it's like Dr. Will Cole, I don't know if you follow him at all, but he has this quote that he says, you know, like continuously eating foods that, you know, wreak havoc on your gut, your hormones, and your mental health is like staying in a toxic relationship and wondering why you're unhappy all the time. Right. So I think part of the beginning of the journey is, okay, if I know that, you know, I'm struggling, you know, what can I do that is really conducive for healing and health? And I think the first and foremost is, you know, the food that we're putting into our body, choosing to eat foods that love us back. And then the second piece is really working on nervous system regulation. You know, I think that was that second piece that I really needed to focus on for myself. Because I think for a lot of us, if we do work a lot on nutrition and we can address, you know, and just getting to eat real whole food as much as possible, it doesn't have to be complicated, right? You know, when we're talking about nutrition here, it can feel very overwhelming. But if we can just really simplify it to, I'm going to eat real whole food, right? If it comes in a bag or a box, long list of ingredients. And this is us talking about health in terms of healing, you know, let food be thy medicine and not in terms of just body composition and macronutrients. You know, it's a very different lens to look at it from. If people were to just do that, and then, you know, if they were to really work on their nervous system, what I mean by that is if you are somebody who knows you're operating in a very high chronic stress place, right? You are living in, like I was, in more of this sympathetic dominant state. And you can tell, right? Anxiety is heightened. Your stress levels are very elevated quite a bit. Some people, that's like their emotional home. So they even don't realize that they're in it. But usually recovery is pretty poor when we're operating in this state. You know, we're much more irritable. Sleep can definitely be impacted. You know, for me, really working on grounding and healing my nervous system through things like meditation, through breath work. Breath work is exponentially powerful for healing the nervous system, because if you think about it, you know, when we are operating in a sympathetic state, what really has our ability to down-regulate the nervous system is the breath, right? Because when we're very stressed, our breath becomes very shallow, becomes very rapid. Oftentimes we hold our breath. So by actually bringing our breath into longer exhales and controlling a bit of our breath, we can actually work towards down-regulating our nervous system and bringing it back into a parasympathetic state. So for me, breath work is a big part of what I do. I'm also a somatic breath work practitioner. I didn't know if you knew that. So I do breath work for people. I've done it a lot for myself, for nervous system. I'd say it's also meditation. It's getting outside, getting the sunlight, getting in nature, right? It's like when we can actually get out of like the hyper achievement kind of stress lifestyle that I think most of us live, like our body enters into a place of just being that is so conducive for healing.
I want to take a brief pause in this conversation with Rachel to talk to you about Organifi. One of the things that I love about Rachel's message is she talks about doing things that your body loves, or putting things in your body that love you back. And I think that's a really great way of framing it, because when we're talking about Organifi, they incorporate ingredients that love us back. When we're talking about adaptogens, we're talking about functional mushrooms, we're talking about micronutrients that our body needs, vitamins, minerals, the things that help us look and feel our best. And Organifi is a new product called Happy Drops. That's right. It is a mood enhancing gummy, which you should know how I feel about gummies. My absolute favorite form of supplementation is through gummies. You know, I'm a big fan of the Shilajit gummies from Organifi. Well, now I've added another one in the rotation, and Mel and I both are taking these daily. And it's a powerhouse of mood balancing ingredients: Gotu Kola, passion fruit, saffron. Go to cola is another one of those underrated ingredients. I talk about it actually when I'm discussing neurotyping. I often talk about go to cola for type 2Bs, but anyone can benefit. And we take the serving size 2 gummies every single day. It's just going to give you a slight improvement in your mood. And who doesn't want to feel better? Happy drops are aptly named because it is a powerhouse of ingredients to boost your mood. And then, of course, I take my Shilajit gummies from Organifi. The problem with Organifi is they just keep coming out with better and better products, and I just keep buying them and taking them. But it's worth it, right? If there's anything worth investing in, it is your health and how you feel. So the Shilajit gummies for my performance, and just that it, because it's such an amazing adaptogen. I take my green juice, crisp apple every morning, gold juice, chocolate flavor every evening. They've got their collagen, which is an amazing supplement. But I would say go try the Happy Drops if you want a little mood enhancement, you want to feel better, or maybe buy it for your partner. if you're married to somebody or with somebody who's a little bit of a negative person, like let's fix that. Just be like, hey, I want you to take, don't tell them what it is. Say, I want you to take these gummies every morning and see if it makes a difference, because I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. And you get 20% off all of Organifi products by going to Organifi.com/popfam. That's Organifi.com/popfam. Use the code popfam at checkout, get 20% off. Go get you some Happy Drops and tell me how you like it, plus all of their other amazing products. It's all 20% off. Organifi.com/popfam. The code is popfam. And now let's get back to the episode. How do you handle that now with all the like endeavors that you have, like everything that you have on your plate, right? You've got your
great question.
Your business, you help other coaches and you certify other coaches, and you've got your practice and you know, do all these things. How do you balance that out? It's like the buzzword, right? Balance. What does that look like for you to, as somebody who is achieving, how do you kind of navigate the, you know, the down regulation side of things? When is there a time that you push? Do you take things in seasons or phases? I'm just curious your approach now.
Yeah, my approach now is very different than what my approach used to be. I've learned a lot from failure. I've learned a lot, and everything I'm talking about, I'm speaking to, and I know it so well because I've been on the other side, right? I've been that person who has the very dysregulated nervous system. I've been the person who's dealt with all of these health issues. I've had to work on all of these different facets of my overall health. And so for me, you know, I can't actually run at the same pace as I used to run at. Now, are there times where there's a little bit more push? Yes, but I've actually learned about me. I have a very, very sensitive nervous system, and it's a gift. It's a blessing in a lot of ways. I am incredibly empathetic. I can connect with people in such a beautiful way. I love to see people. I love to hold space for them, but I also take on a lot of people's energy. And yeah, running a business, growing an empire, doing all of these things, it's not necessarily conducive for overall health, right? But I've had to really learn to dance between the two worlds, right? Dance between the entrepreneurial world and dance between, you know, some people call it friends who call it woo-wee, like the woo-wee world. I'm like, why is it woo-wee? No, it's just, you know, it's doing what you need to do in order to support overall health. It's more spending more time being. And so now I just sprinkle a little bit of that into my day always. So what was I doing here before this podcast, right? Like I go outside, I get myself in alignment. I work on really grounding my nervous system versus old Rachel. If I would have back-to-back calls and I would just come on this podcast from, you know, two other calls that I had line up, you'd probably have a Rachel getting on this podcast that's super upregulated, that's super stressed and trying to deliver this. And by the end of the day, I'm exhausted and I'm burnt out. So I've had to learn that I need periods of being able to reground myself, to bring myself back into alignment so I can't run at the same pace that I used to. Now, I can still do the things that I want to do. It just looks a little bit differently. And I also know when there's periods of extreme push, like I just launched my functional nutrition certification or I have an event. I need some time thereafter to also really allow my body to come back. And I only know this from being burnt out multiple times in my business.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to now you know yourself, you know your body, you know when you can push, you know when you need to dial it back. The thing that always fascinates me, and I've asked this question before, I don't know if I ever got a really clear answer. And I always, because the first process or the first step of any change is always awareness. Like if we don't know what we don't know. So if we're not aware, can't make the change. And the question is, how do we go from unaware to aware? Like we have a lot of people who are in this hyper sympathetic state, but it's just become their normal, right? It's just how we operate. It's the day-to-day grind. I get up and I go to work and I pick up the kids and I'm constantly on the go. And if someone were to say, like, are you overly stressed? They'd be like, no, this is just life. This is what I do. This is what I need to do. How do we go from that place of lack of awareness to bringing that to awareness, if that makes sense? Like the, I don't know what I don't know to, oh my God, maybe I am running on overdrive. Maybe I am, you know, dysregulated. Maybe I do need more parasympathetic activities. Like how do we create that awareness to be able to be more introspective and say, now I know what my body needs and I can listen and tune in and actually, you know, take the time for myself when it's necessary.
Yeah. I think there's two ways. I think first and foremost, which is most people, we get to a point where we are so unhappy, where our body is at a point where it's giving us so much pushback. You know, for some people, they're dealing with insomnia. Sometimes it's their depression and their anxiety has reached an all-time high. Some people, it may be their gut issues. Maybe someone is diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, right? So I think for a lot of people, it isn't until they get to this point of like a really big wake-up call where they start to create the self-awareness of, oh, you know, maybe what I'm doing is not conducive for my overall health. But it's hard, right? Because when we're in it, we're in it. I can look back and look at my own story and journey. And, you know, when I was very unaware, very unconscious, it was my normal. I was in it. I was in my routine. And it wasn't until I started to deal with a lot of my own health issues and depression, anxiety, and I'm going to all these doctors that I actually had to take a step back and be very, very real with myself. And it wasn't even after, you know, I went to all of these doctors that I actually had to be like, okay, I actually have to be the one, you know, like this route also isn't helping me, right? So it was taking massive then ownership over my health. But I think also too, another alternative is getting an alternate experience, right? And the example I can think of for this is, you know, I was busting my ass last year. I was, you know, at the end of the year and I was exhausted, but I didn't know I was that tired. I didn't know, you know? And then I took a trip and I did a solo trip actually. I went to Tulum. I know. Everyone's like, oh, everyone go solo trip healing to Tulum. But I did a trip by myself and I was able to get this alternate experience of like, wow, this is what it feels like to just like be and be so grounded in my body. And I came back and I had such a different outlook on things. And it gave me this alternate perspective of like, wow, I didn't even realize that I was that stressed until I wasn't anymore. And I hear this all the time with people who come to work with us even too. They're like, I didn't even know that I felt bad until I actually realized what it was like to truly feel good. And I think that's a lot of people. I think a lot of people are operating in that middle ground place, right? Because the people who are so bad like me, or they get to that point, they become self-aware, right? They get to that level of consciousness. At least we hope. There are some people who definitely don't. But for the most people who are operating in this middle point, like we are operating very unaware. So unless we have an alternate experience, and this could be yeah, it could be going on a trip. It could be somebody else who comes into your life and it gives you a new perspective or something. It could be, I truly think it could be listening to a podcast or reading a book, and then you hear a new perspective and then it allows you to shine a light. Just anything that can shift our current perspective, I think can be an opportunity to shift our current reality. Now, the question is that enough to create the change? I think most people, in order to create change, true change in their life, most of the time it has to be because there's massive immediate pain. And that pain is enough leverage to actually want to go through the pain of change.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's one of the unfortunate realities. I wish that we were more proactive instead of reactive, and you know, that it didn't take the rock bottom. Like I always have heard the phrase that people will change when the pain of staying the same is greater than the perceived pain of change. And I wish that wasn't the case. Like I wish that we could view perceived pain of change as growth and empowerment and this, you know, optimal level of living. Except if the current situation's not painful enough, oftentimes, again, going back to like the survival mechanism, our brains crave that certainty, and it's the known, the familiar, and I'm going to stay in this pattern because it's comfortable and it's predictable, which in my brain's mind is better for survival. So it's going to keep me there. I don't know if there's a good answer to become more proactive other than doing what you're saying, which is being open to new perspectives and trying to get out of the you know, mundane routine, like just finding little ways to break the routine and get out, maybe get out in nature, plan the trips, you know, have different experiences, conversations, education, whatever it may be. It's just kind of like dripping those in throughout your days, weeks, months, or whatever the schedule looks like. And hopefully there's that proactive side of you that keeps speaking up louder and louder. It's like, you know what? I don't need to wait for things to get so bad that I have no other choice. I can actually start taking the first step. And I think that's usually the scariest. Is there anything that you do to make the first step seem less intimidating? Whether that's like somebody who's going on the gut healing journey or somebody who's just trying to be healthier and start prioritizing better nutrition, and or somebody who's going into the gym for the first time, like helping to make the first step seem less intimidating.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at it as this big, long journey that we have to step on, like it, that feels very, very daunting, I think, for anybody to think about. I know for myself, if I would have had to think about like the entire years of healing that I was going to have to go down, because it was so much more than just healing my gut and changing my diet. It was, I mean, I'm still on my healing journey. Aren't we all, right, with continuously like doing the inner work on ourselves? You know, if I would have really looked at it from that lens, you know, that can often create a lot of paralyzing emotions for people, where it causes us to become stagnant. So I've found that, one, we need to just focus on like what are the small little micro changes that we can make immediately. Like for me, the one of the reasons why I've been able to stay consistently with working out for so long is because I will work out for 15 minutes if that's all that I get. Like it is one of those things where I thought about I needed to get in like an hour, 2 hour workout every single day, right? And how long that is, that becomes a bit more paralyzing. And it's like, oh, I don't have time for that. But oftentimes it's all right, I'm going to go move my body for 15 minutes. And if that's all that it is, I keep that in what it is that I'm doing ultimately. So I think breaking it down and making it a lot smaller. I also think too, there has to be that identity piece that's really intertwined with it. And, you know, the conversation we were having about, you know, I wish that it didn't have to be to the point where there's massive pain in somebody's life to create the change. But unfortunately, usually it does, unless there is a big identity shift into what it is that they are doing, right? Because we'll always come back to the level of what our identity is based in, right? Because I identify with myself as, you know, an athlete, right? It's very much a non-negotiable for me in order to get in my workouts, to move my body, to eat healthy. Now, if it was just something that I was doing, I would operate very, very differently. But I think in order to create the shift in a positive, it's almost like we have to shift our identity to something that we are not currently, which is really, really hard for us to do. But I think that's how we can make some of those immediate shifts is one, you know, a bit of the identity shift. And Ed Milet talks a little bit about this, but, you know, he talks about how do you shift your identity? How do you raise, he does it like a water line, like in the pool, right? So let's just say like you have a pool and then, you know, you fill up that pool to a higher level that it's ever been before. And maybe you just do this for like something quick, like for a little while you were able to stick and go to the gym or you saw some kind of results, but you were able to do it for even a period of time. Even though the water comes back down, there's like this water line that is left there, right? It's like almost like there's a memory of that, right? So it's like that identity is a little bit still engraved in us. And so our entire life now, we're going to be operating like trying to get back to that waterline. Like it's very hard to want to come down from it. So I think sometimes we can do some things to make some shifts and changes to kind of really shock. I know it sounds silly, but like kind of shock our system, shock ourselves a little bit. I know for me, sometimes it's had to be, you know, just really going all in on something for a period of time. And maybe that's not something that I'm going to do for a long term, but it really allowed me to create that new water line in the pool where even though I came back, it helped me really shift my identity into, I can do this.
It's just kind of giving that little bit of proof that it's possible. Like the 4-minute mile. Once it was seen, it could be done. Then everybody believed it. And then after it was broken the first time, you know, a bunch of people did it after that. Or it made me think of the example in the book, Atomic Habits, of people who are trying to quit smoking. Atomic Habits. Yeah. And so it was like the two groups of one group was just told like, I'm trying to quit smoking. And then the other group was trying to identify as a non-smoker. Like I am not a smoker. And there was significantly more success in the identity group versus just saying, I'm trying to quit. And I think just little mental hacks that we can play that increase the likelihood that we follow through. And even if it's not, you know, it's never an overnight change, but to your point, if it gets you to the gym once, then it's proof that you can do it. If it gets you, you know, eating a little bit better for a week, it's proof that you can do it. And then we have that evidence that it is possible. And that kind of gives us the, hopefully the mental breakthrough to make the change, to make the identity shift. That was something that I think I really learned from therapy was, that I'm always going to default back to the belief system and to the identity level. And it was getting to understand what those beliefs and what the identity was that was pulling me back and then being able to address that and use it as kind of like the superpower of, okay, well, if that's where I'm going to default back to, then I can use this in a positive way and create a better narrative or more productive narrative that serves the purpose of what I'm trying to accomplish. So, that's another way to address kind of like the emotional side of things so that we don't always, you know, that's typically what self-sabotage is we're like operating against our beliefs or identity. And then we like pull ourselves back down unknowingly. And then we don't understand like why I did that. And I think probably one of the most underrated parts of the process, which is addressing your belief system, addressing your identity. Like, what do I actually believe I'm capable of? I had somebody who reached out to me recently and her exact message through email was like, I don't believe that I can be fixed, but that was like, can you help me? And I was like, until that sentence changes, probably not, you know? And it's unfortunate. There's that like fixed mindset of, I guess that as I'm rambling, it makes me think of the flip side of it where somebody has done something so many times, let's say it's dieting, for example, lost weight, gained it back, lost weight, gained it back. How do we avoid that being proof that we can't do it, that we aren't able to successfully achieve the, you know, aesthetic or health or whatever, because we've gone through so many failed attempts in the past?
Yeah. I know that's where a lot of people do end up, right? And that's what's hard, because when we have so many different attempts after a period of time, it feels like it erodes our confidence, right? And there's a part of us that it does, because what the brain is saying is, you know, it's like, hey, I'm going to start this. And then there's like that little subconscious like voice that's like, oh, hey, remember this last time when you started it and you said you were going to do this? And then what happened? You're really not going to. And you're like, no, I'm really going to do it. And then that voice is coming up that's like, I don't think so, right? That comes up. Which I think, one, that's why it is so crucial. And like, we can have grace with ourselves, and we need to have grace, because I think what's also problematic about, you know, a lot of the fitness and culture and everything is it's very much all or nothing mentality. But there is the truth of, yeah, when we do set out to do things and we make a promise to ourselves and we break that promise of what we say we're going to do, you know, it does affect our confidence. So then later we have a lot more self-doubt. Like, that is 100% true. We can't deny that. So the question is, right, is how do we then overcome, right, when we have almost in a lot of ways broken a lot of that trust of said what we were going to do, we didn't do it and we didn't fall through, and then now we're wanting to begin again. And I think oftentimes, one, we need to change a little bit of the goalpost, you know, for one, because oftentimes people have these big, big goals and it's really difficult to do. Let's say, you know, and I have someone in my life right now who is struggling with alcoholism, right? And they're like, oh, I'm going to cut it out. I'm never going to drink again, right? And then they would really, really struggle when they would really slip up, and this really started to erode their confidence. So then the goal had to shift and become of like, okay, I'm going to make it, you know, 30 days, like on my sobriety journey. And we had to shift and change the goal a little bit. We had to make it a little bit more of a micro goal. So we can almost, we need to recreate new wins. Like, that's what we need to give ourselves. So it's like, all right, what is the goal that I can create that I know that I can do? And I know it may sound silly to be like, all right, it's 1 week. You know, I'm going to go to the gym, you know, 5 days this week. And just this week, now I'm going to go and do this whole like workout program, right? Because when you break that, then you feel that distrust inside. But what is the goal that I can set that I know that I can hit? Because right now, the most important thing is I need to work on rebuilding this sense of confidence and trust with myself. And once you hit that one, you can hit another one and you can really start to build back up again. But I think often where a lot of people are messing up and like, yeah, like set big goals, great. But if we're not hitting those, we need to kind of move the goalposts back a bit and work our way up from there. And then I'd say having a really powerful why. Like, I think the biggest part of it is oftentimes if our whys are very, very shallow, right? Like, I've worked with people who have chronic gut issues and all of these things in their life, and they are the most compliant clients ever. Like, they have such a powerful why. One, they're in so much pain, right? But I think every time we have such a powerful why, and I kind of coming back to the identity piece, but our why is also attached so much to our identity, right? We're going to be able to have that much better results. But if our goal is, hey, I just want to look better, or I just want to have shredded six-pack abs, it's like, cool, you may do it for a period of time, but you're probably not going to stick to it long-term. So shorten the goalpost, make it small, let's stack some wins again, even how silly it is. And then I'd really have the question is like, what is really the why on why you're doing this? Because we're all going to have those days where we wake up and, you know, we don't feel like it, where we're exhausted, when we're tired, when all of our natural instincts, you know, cravings and all of that comes in, the voices. So when that comes up, and even preemptively having these conversations with people, not if, when that happens, how do you want to talk to yourself? What are you going to tell yourself? What are you going to do? And we almost need to preframe that a little bit, because I think a lot of people like overly assume and like they set these goals when they're operating from a very high energy place, right? Most of the time we set goals and big ambitions, we're not at like a very, very low point. We're like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And we're super ambitious and we do it. So we're making these big goals operating from a very high vibrational point. But then we go back into these low vibrational points because we're human. Maybe we didn't sleep well. Maybe we're stressed. Maybe there's other things going on in our life. And now it's shifted and changed a little bit. So I always like to think, even for anything that I do in my life, of like, how can I go back how can like high level Rachel right now, like pre-protect low level Rachel? Cause I know this is low level Rachel's instincts of what she wants to do when she's in it. And I have to have that inner conversation with myself just to be able to know, like, this is what actually is going to happen. And this is how you're going to feel. Cause I don't know about you, but I often make a lot of, I'll make like a ton of decisions too, like with my business when I'm like operating at this very high level state. I'll be like, oh, I'm going to, yes, yes, yes. And then, you know, I'll get down into it and I'll be like, oh, why did I say yes to so many things? It's kind of like the same thing. Or vice versa, when we're operating at that low point, it's like, no, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to see anybody. Right. So we have to take into consideration, like we are humans. We're going to have different emotional fluctuations in that. But how do we want to take care of ourselves? I mean, I can go a little bit more inward into some of the work, but it's like parent Rachel, how do I want to take care of little Rachel when little Rachel's on the scene? How can I really show up for her when she's struggling, when she's needing it? And how can I really give her what she needs? Because oftentimes that's what's really happening.
Yeah, it's great. And I think when you're in the moment of that lower vibrational state, it's easy to react to the moment versus when you have planned for it and then you're already aware, like, okay, we knew this was
like, oh, all right, I went over this, I rehearsed this.
I have the plan in place and I've been here before. And I love what you said about the deeper meaning. I think what often happens when we have that shallow why, we end up on the hedonic treadmill of it's never good enough because there's no like deeper meaning to it. And my why was like to weigh a certain number. So then when I hit that goal and my life didn't change and I still felt exactly the same way, and it was like this empty feeling. And then I was like, oh, maybe I have to weigh 10 pounds less. And then I got there and it was like maybe 10 pounds less. And I just kept chasing and pushing the goalpost back until I actually made it mean something. It was more than just, I want to weigh a certain number. I want to look a certain way. So I think it's important that we actually address like what's below the surface and go like many layers deep to make sure that it holds, you know, a strong foundation through the entire journey. So with that, I want to be respectful of your time. What is your why? Why do you do what you do?
I had a feeling you were going to ask that. You know, it's interesting because this is actually a question like I've thought a lot about, and some of the first reasons that I thought of like the why isn't always necessarily the same as to what it is today. But, you know, I am able to get out of bed, to lean into all of the hard, to continue to do so much of this work that I do, even on the days that I don't feel like it. And I've had to really sit and ask myself of like, okay, what is really the big motivation? And the main thing that I've came back to is, you know, this little girl inside of me. And I grew up with a very, I guess you could say, broken family. You know, I was a little girl who was very insecure. I was the shy girl. I barely had a voice when I was younger. I didn't feel like I had a whole lot of worth or value. I dealt with a lot of things growing up. And despite all of that, I've always, always fought for this little girl my entire life. And I've been the underdog my entire life, right? I shouldn't be where I'm actually at now today. I shouldn't, you know, it wasn't in my cards to have the life, to be speaking, to be doing all of these things. It was actually the exact opposite, but there's always been this very powerful why for me of like, I'm fighting for this little girl. I'm fighting for this little girl to give her the life, to give her the health, to give her what ultimately like she was in a lot of ways never given when she was younger. So my entire journey, and when I was younger, and even when I was struggling with a lot of my health issues, I was fighting with her in a lot of these ways. Like I was butting heads with her. And I think we realize that our journey becomes such a powerful why when we realize like we are fighting for that younger version of ourselves inside of us who felt like we were never good enough, who felt like we never had a voice, who felt like, you know, all of these things. Because ultimately, those are the things that are holding us back, right? Like we talked about on the identity side of it all. It's like these are the beliefs that keep us. But it's like also that is why you have to. This is why I can get up out of bed every single day on the days where I don't feel like it, is because I'm fighting for that little girl. I'm fighting for that little girl who didn't believe she was good enough, who had all of this. I'm fighting for her to become the woman that she's always known that she could be, ultimately. And that ties so much into the identity piece. And then, you know, ultimately, I know one of my really big powerful whys has been to take a lot of the things that I've walked through and really being able to serve that into my future family, to be able to serve that and give that and pour that into other people in my life. And I think it's these two things. It's the inner healing and then taking the things that we walk through and turning it outward to help other people to do the exact same. That's really been my ultimate mission and why. Why I do everything that I do.
Amazing. Well, I'm grateful that you fought for her and are fighting for her, and for sharing your gift with me and with the audience. I really appreciate it. For anybody that is interested in connecting with you or learning more about your practice and your work, or any coaches that are listening that want to learn more about your certification, if you can just share all the places to connect and anything that would be helpful for anyone interested in working with you.
Yeah, you can check me out on Instagram. It's at Rachel Shear. And then my website's rachelshear.com, where you can see all things on my practice, certification, and business coaching.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time. And we will chat soon.
Thank you.